This question was given to me by one of the listeners to ask you. He says, Boyd, it has come to my attention that you have been involved in a secret cult for the last 10 years, that you have an altar dedicated to the cult's gods in your house, and that you've even painted your bathroom in honor of your devotion. This mind control cult that has made you change your last name when you were involved in the ritual or cult activity. What can you tell us about this fringe group?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about. No, that's the Partridge Family Temple. Yeah, I have erected an altar to them in my house. I have an altar that's painted like the Partridge Family bus, and I have autographed photos of every single member of the Partridge Family, signed in the first season, except for Chris, because they were right in between Jeremy Galbox and the other guy. They hadn't gotten a new Chris yet, so I have Danny Bonaducci autographed Dante Bonaducci, David Cassidy, Susan Day, Shirley Jones. And yeah, I painted my bathroom to look like the bus.
Our watchdog group has uncovered that you are using your media influence to promote this cult's activities. Your interview with Sean Partridge, and that you may be releasing some music from him, and in collaboration with a high-ranking member who uses the name Go-Go Giddle.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that?
I don't know how many years ago it's been now, but I started recording a CD with Sean Partridge at least 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. And it's just, you know, I've spent a lot of money having it recorded and traveling out to Portland to record it. And then when he was in town, we tried to finish it. And it's just, for whatever reason, you know, we've come along, we've come into trouble at every twist and turn. But the stuff we've got is just brilliant. But you know, that might eventually just be released as some sort of maxi EP or something. A couple of the things we did are on here. Why Did the Feminist Cross the Road? And this thing called Motherfucking Deer Bit Me. But yeah, you should interview Sean sometime, because he just went on the radio in Portland. He played a lot of this other stuff we'd recorded, and I mean, we've got a number of good things. And then I keep meaning to do stuff with Giddle, because she's got, or with Go-Go, and she's got the best voice on earth. We've gone to karaoke, and she does Connie Francis songs, and she sounds better than Connie Francis ever sounded. I mean, she's got one of these brilliant voices that just cuts right through you. But she'd done a little bit. There's a song, this pop song about, have you ever heard this pop song about the bathroom?
I don't think
where
so.
Where it's a woman, it's like a love song. A woman is singing to her bathroom, like, in my bathroom, I am truly free in my bathroom. I can be me in my bathroom. And it's this brilliant fucking song, and I thought it'd be great to just take this old 60s song and just release it exactly as is, but have the sound of a woman urinating in the background. And so we've recorded Go-Go Partridge urinating, and I just need to go into the studio and put the two things together to have a masterpiece.
And some of these things you're working on, will you be putting them out on your own label? Is that's Hierarchy Records?
No, you see, Hierarchy Records went through World Serpent. And like, the reason I left them was that I'd done this really obscure compilation of girl groups from the 60s called Music for Pussycats. And I finished every single aspect of it and gave it to them. They said it would be out in 2 weeks, and like, 2 years later it wasn't out. So I finally just got disgusted and just said, well, this is silly. So that particular compilation is coming out through Soleil Moon, and I think, you know, probably any of the stuff that is not noise stuff that I don't put out through Mute will undoubtedly come out through Soleil Moon. But I don't know if they're interested in the Sean Partridge thing or not. I mean, the world really does need to know about Sean Partridge, because he's brilliant. All those people are brilliant. But the new—I interviewed Sean Partridge for the new issue of Pat. Static magazine, which ought to be out any day now. So if people are unfamiliar with Sean Partridge, he did a song on my Hatesville CD.
Uh-huh.
And there are a couple of his things on The Way I Feel, but people like to know more about Sean Partridge, they can look for the next issue of Panic.
Panic magazine, for our listeners' information, is carried by Kevin at Den of Iniquity, which is diaboli.com.
Well, great.
So I'm sure he'll have the new issue.
And the new issue of Dagobert's Revenge is going to be out any day now. And I've written a number of things for them. I wrote an article on the Cross of Lorraine, as a matter of fact, and then I wrote an article called Toward the Undivided, Sacred Sex, the Hermaphrodite, and the Dual Nature of God. And it's just how, in most of the ancient mythologies, you know, God was perceived to, you know, be good and evil, male and female. And it's all about that. In fact, there were sects of heretical Christians and heretical Jews, actually, who had a theory that if God created man in his own image, that the first man would have been a hermaphrodite.
Right. I see. Interesting theories.
It's an interesting idea, and I mean, you can in alchemy, you can find it in the Kabbalah with Adam Kadmon. I mean, it wasn't just an oddball idea, it was actually an idea that was really kind of pervasive at one time.
Also involved in your interpretation of Abraxas, correct?
Yeah, but in this article, at the end I've put an appendix where I have examples of all the old gods who had a dual nature. I mean, even the word for God in most languages, deus, is very close to their same word for two. Like in Spanish languages, it's dos or dios. In French, it's, du or du.
Uh-huh.
De. You know, I mean, I can't pronounce French very well. But I mean, in most languages, the difference between the word for God and the word for two is just like the addition of some letter, like an I or something. So it's a very interesting theory, and it's, I'm surprised nobody's really recognized a lot of this stuff before, because once I came up with the basic premise and started looking into the ancient mythologies, it's really very pervasive.
On to another topic, so your influences and your inspirations, who would you say inspires you daily? Is there anyone that inspires you to keep doing the things that you're doing, to keep looking into these different mysteries and recording projects?
No, I think it's really just a case of sort of ancestral memory or something. There's something in me, there's something in my blood that drives me on, that pushes me towards certain kind of symbols or certain kind of figures in history. It's almost like I look to these people to confirm what I already feel intuitively or something. I mean, in terms of early on, I think a person who really inspired me was Max Ernst, the Dadaist and Surrealist, just because he took so many different approaches to art. And he sort of showed me the way that you can come up with all sorts of different experimental approaches to doing whatever you want, be it art or music or whatever. But I mean, lately there are very few people who seem that inspiring to me. I mean, it's exciting to think there were people around a few hundred years ago who had essentially the same ideas as me, or that there were people in maybe the 6th century BC who had the same ideas as me. That's interesting, but it's not necessarily inspiring. It's just something that shows me that I may perhaps be on the right path.
Right.
That I'm not just an oddball who's coming up with these ideas from nowhere, that these ideas have been around forever. You know, they aren't original. They're, you know, very, very old.
Reference to your works, what would you say your most favorite or your most controversial work is, or both?
I don't know. I like a lot of my really early stuff, my more ambient stuff. I mean, I think that's aged really well, but I've done so many different things, and I like them each in their own way. It's hard to choose a particular one. But, you know, it's like I don't know about in terms of being controversial, because some of the things I've done that I thought would be the most controversial are things that everybody just universally liked, and, you know, I thought they were going to piss off a bunch of people. And I didn't do them to piss off a bunch of people. I just thought, this is really fun, but I bet people are going to, you know, want to tar and feather me. And they
right.
come out, and then I'll do other things that I think are perfectly innocent, which will piss people off for no reason at all. I don't know. And it's like, for instance, somebody's writing me now. It's like every week I get something in the mail, one or two things in the mail, and there's no return address, and it will just be a weird quote printed on a piece of paper. And like the first one I got was a quote that I had said 20 years ago in an interview. And I know, because I'm interested in like the Holy Grail and a lot of things now that people think are well outside the realm of what I should be interested in.
Uh-huh.
People like send me these old quotes where I say, you know, I say something anti-Christian, and they
right.
send me this as if to say, you know, oh, you're such a hypocrite. Look at what you said, and look at what you're saying now. And my kind of reaction to that is like, oh, geez, you know, I said something 20 years ago, and now I'm turning around and saying something which seems to contradict it. It's like, I'm sorry if I'm being incredibly inconsistent, but, you know, at this rate, I might turn around 20 years from now and say something that seems totally, you know, in contrast to what I'm saying at the present day. So, I mean, you know, so what?
Right, the evolution of ideas. Some people would want you to always stick with what you said 20 years ago, I suppose.
And it's like, I think I've been, you know, incredibly consistent. If anything, I think, you know, that might be my fault. It's like, it gets to the point where I was putting out records and I'm thinking, oh, fuck, you know, I've been saying essentially the same thing for the last 20 years, you know. I know there are people who are still inspired by it, but it's just like, to keep things interesting even for myself, I have to do things that are a little bit different every now and again.
Right.
I have to evolve. I have to, like, it all has to mutate and grow.
Definitely agree. Well, I think we're running low on time for this episode, so why don't we close it up with another track off your collaborations record, Alone with the Calm, the Boyd Rice Experience.
Okay, should I tell you something about that?
Sure.
So, okay, it's like, this is about my friend Joel Hartling, who, he does brass on a lot of the solo stuff I do, like... He did all the brass on the theme for Pearls Before Swine, but he has a cabin up in the mountains, and during a really hectic, stressed out period of my life, I would every now and then go up there for a week or something, and it's a place with no electricity, no phones, there's running water but no hot water, and it gets really cold, you have to build a fire, but his cabin is called Bella McCree, and I used to go up there all the time, and I really liked that place, so this is sort of a little song I wrote about Joel Hartling's cabin, Bella McCree.
Excellent. This is another one of my favorite tracks off this record that I enjoy playing in my record store for the for the shopping customers who inevitably they're not paying much attention. They're flipping through records, and then they start to hear what you're saying, and they all look at me with quizzical expressions on their faces. So, to finish off this episode with Boyd Rice, here is Alone with the Calm by the Boyd Rice Experience.